Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I am your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And I want to give a big shout out and thanks to our supporters at TrentHornPodcast.com, to the premium subscribers. We've now surpassed our goal of 500 patrons. And that's something we've been shooting for the last year. I thought it would take several years, really, to reach that goal. But because of your generosity, we have reached it prematurely, which is a great thing because that allows this podcast to exist, to have multiple daily episodes, for it to be advertised so many more people can hear about it, and for us to do things like soon fly in guests to the Catholic Answer Studios so we can have high-quality debates and dialogues with people who are non-Catholic that we are currently in the process of planning right now. I've got one locked in for the end of May. Well, really, there'll be four episodes out of that with a Protestant friend of mine. We'll be talking about a lot of interesting subjects, and also a few atheists, other Protestants, and then hopefully other non-Catholics, you know, having Jewish, Muslim, Druid, Hindu, who knows, atheist and agnostic, of course, lots of different guests to have, and that's made possible by your support. But we're not going to stop at just 500 patrons. Soon I'm doing some research right now, and I plan to announce at TrentHornPodcast.com our future plans for the podcast, but I think the next goal will probably be 1,000 patrons. And if we can hit that, I think we'll be able to develop something that will assist the podcast in reaching many more people so they can access the new study series that we're creating, more apologetic content, short form videos, all in one handy way to access that. I have to be a bit vague on what that will be because I'm doing as Jesus said, you know, before you build the tower, count the costs. So I'm doing preliminary research to see the feasibility of this, which I think we can do once we reach 1,000 patrons or somewhere along that way. So very excited. And yes, a big thank you to everyone. And I actually had someone email me saying, hey, I want to support the podcast, but I can only give $2 a month. That helps. Everything helps to be able to cover the little expenses that come up to be able to offer this program for you and for so many other people. So I'm grateful. I'm very humbled that many people have been listening. Even if you're not listening, even if you can't support, I've always told people, and I really do mean this. I really do mean this. I would much rather have someone listen and pray for the podcast than give money and ignore it. I am completely serious about that. If you had to make a choice between writing me a check so we can make the podcast possible, but you just, you know, you write a check and you, you know, set it and forget it, whatever, or you listen to these episodes, you pray for the work we're doing here, and you apply what you hear in these episodes in your daily life, I will 1,000% support that decision over the other. Because look, at the end of the day, we'll figure out a way to make things work. We always do. But the reason I want to do this podcast, the reason I started the Council of Trent was to equip people like you to be able to go out and graciously and persuasively share their faith with other people, even when it can be scary to do that, even when it can feel uncomfortable. I want to give you the tips and the abilities to be able to do that and share with you how I've done that. And that's why I'm moving the podcast in the direction of interviewing, debating, and dialoguing with non-Catholics, because I think one of the best ways to teach you how to defend the faith is to model it in dialogues and debates with other people who disagree. That's why we've had such great success on Catholic Answers Live with why are you pro-choice or why are you an atheist, being able to model that. And where I think the podcast will go much further than what we've been able to do on Catholic Answers Live is that Catholic Answers Live is a live radio show. And so I'm talking with people, but the most amount of time I can give somebody is maybe 12 or 15 minutes. But on average, I'm going to talk to someone on Catholic Answers Live for, you know, 7 minutes, 10 minutes at best. And that's just not enough time to have a substantive discussion. Also, we don't know everyone who's calling in. You know, we've got different backstories and different approaches to the issues. So we have to play a lot of catch up just to know, hey, what are we even talking about here in the first place? And then we get to the meat of the disagreement that's involved. So Catholic Answers Live, it's so funny. Before I came to Catholic Answers Live, they had the open forum for non-Catholics. That was the primary show we had on Catholic Answers Live to reach people who weren't Catholic. That if you were, it was dedicated, if you were not Catholic, call in and ask your questions about the Catholic faith. But the show, I think, and this would be, I was hired back in 2012. So right in October 2012, 2 months before the world was supposed to end, I got hired on. And before that point, The shows on Catholic Answers Live, I think, really focused more on Catholic callers calling into the show. And just, you have a question, our crack team of apologists will answer it. You know, you got a question, here's your answer, have a blessed day. Now, you know, we don't treat it like we're just getting your McDonald's McDouble down the line and, you know, throwing it out to you. Here, here's your Happy Meal and off you go. Which, by the way, I'm always depressed when I see the McDouble. Don't be fooled by the McDouble, ladies and gentlemen. The McDouble is two meat patties, but it is only one slice of cheese. You got to go with the double cheeseburger because it's got the two slices of cheese. And there is no cheese like the melted processed cheese of a McDonald's cheeseburger. It's just like a warm, artery-clogging hug inside of your body. As you can tell, I'm recording this before lunchtime, so I very much like to go and eat. Also, you know what happened at McDonald's by my house? The travesty. I'm grateful. They brought back $2 fish fillets for Friday. Yay, helps during Lent. But McDonald's giveth and McDonald's taketh away. They took away, at least at this location, the $3 triple cheeseburger. That was a fantastic deal. So, hashtag first world Catholic apologist Trenthorn problems. Let's talk about today what I want to discuss. So I was sitting here in my office thinking about what would really benefit and help people in defending their faith. What could I talk about? A lot of times I want to speak about things I see in the news or cultural events because it's relevant to you. And I think there's some on the horizon that we should talk about. In fact, you know, I know what I would like to talk about next week. Well, hopefully we'll have an episode next week. I just got word that our audio engineer may be out for the entire week. So if there's no episode next week, you'll know that's why we don't have our audio engineer here who compresses and makes our recording sound oh so good. So if he's not here and we can't figure out a workaround, there might not be an episode next week. But hopefully there will be. In fact, I saw an article and things that are going on with Georgia with the heartbeat bill. So that might be something I'll talk about next week related to arguments people make with abortion. You know, oldie but a goodie for me. So I was sitting in here, I was looking off at my bookshelves here in my office. You know, I don't have art, I don't have my, you know, anything else, no pictures of my family. We're so bad at home. We're the kind of family who doesn't have pictures of ourselves. We never get around to putting them up. But I've got my books, which are important for the work that I do here. And I was looking down at the bottom of my left bookshelf, and I saw Peter Kraef's book, Socratic Logic. And that was part of the logic text that I used for my course at Holy Apostles College, where actually I now teach as an adjunct online professor. I teach a course called Moral Apologetics. And that's a course I'm going to offer through the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics as well. We'll be filming that this summer. So if you want to enroll in a program where I teach you how to defend the moral teaching of the Catholic faith, stay tuned for that. And so seeing the Socratic Logic book, I love logic and philosophy. My first love is my beautiful wife, Laura, of course, obviously, but an academic kind of love that, you know, during my conversion process, I dove deep into theology and apologetics to really understand that in high school. But then when I was a senior, after high school, graduated, the first college class that I took was in the summer after graduation, so that would have been in 2003, I enrolled at Scottsdale Community College, home of the Fighting Artichokes. That's right, the mascot really is Artie the Artichoke. And I enrolled in Susan Anfinson's Philosophy 101 class. And Philosophy 101 has got to be one of the most difficult subjects for a teacher to teach in a university setting, I really feel like. Because, you know, when you go into Chemistry 101, when you go into physics 101, you don't stand up and say, well, professor, here's what I think a lot of physicists get wrong. Or, well, here's what I think, you know, chemistry should be. You don't think you know more than your teacher that you're a master of chemistry or physics. Or even if you take a foreign language, you take Spanish 101, you don't go in there thinking you're some master at Spanish. You know, at best, you're saying, ah, I know Espanol. Voy a la biblioteca, señorita. I go to the library. La biblioteca es roja. The library is red. But in Philosophy 101, and I remember this sitting in the classes, people thought they knew everything. You'd have these people that stood up. I had a philosophy professor once for an introductory class. He said to, I'll call him, I don't remember the professor's name. He always wore a straw hat, though. I do remember that, shorts and a straw hat. But the student, he would always critique Mark. He once said to Mark, this know-it-all student, in an intro class, Mark, I just wish right now I had a tape recorder to play back to you what you just said so you could hear how inane you sound. But that's what you get, because you get people who go to philosophy classes. But even outside of that, you get people who put forward these ideas and they don't know how to think. I think that's one of the greatest travesties that we face in the modern age, is that we have stopped teaching people how to think. Even in the Catholic faith, you look at religious education, look at CCD, look at Catholic high schools. Really, they follow the public school model. Here's your information, regurgitate information back. You proved you learned it. Great, let's move on to the next module, to the next lesson. We don't teach people how to think or critically think through an idea to see if it's correct, if it's sound. The Greek philosopher Aristotle once said that the mark of a learned or intelligent person is the ability to entertain an idea without accepting it. You get people, they hear something, and they say, oh yeah, that sounds great. But then they don't stop to think, hey, wait a minute. Does this make sense? And so that's the purpose of philosophy, and especially logic. Logic is the principle of just making sure that you are thinking correctly, that your patterns of reasoning and inference follow particular rules of inferring or reasoning, because you can think incorrectly. You can arrive at a conclusion, you can arrive at an idea in a complete incorrect way, and most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, it turns out to be a false idea. And false ideas, false things can lead to destruction. That the truth, what we believe as Catholics, something called the transcendentals, that the ultimate greatest things in the universe, well, the greatest thing in the summum bonum, the good of all goods, is God himself. And all goods and perfections ultimately come from God. So we talk a lot about the Catholic faith being true, good, and beautiful. So as St. Thomas Aquinas taught about these transcendentals, that, you know, truth, overarching truth or goodness or beauty, is that things that are true are also good and beautiful. Things that are beautiful are true and good. They can kind of replace one another in a sense when you look at them. It's like you're looking at the same thing in different ways when you notice that it's, you know, when you notice that a mathematical formula is true, it corresponds to mathematical reality. It's also, there's a beauty to it that you see, an elegance, a simplicity in its form. When you see things, you know, that are true, they have that. And something that is good also has truth and beauty intertwined within it. They all go together. And ultimately in God, God just is truth, is goodness, and is beauty itself. And so we want to get there. Problem is, we don't always go the right direction. Sometimes we don't think our way clearly through. So I wanted to talk today about logic and its role in helping us arrive at the true, the good, and the beautiful. I'll give you an example here of someone not thinking things through clearly. I remember someone, I was in a debate once, not a debate, it was a discussion on Twitter or Facebook, which, by the way, I'm slowly moving out of that now, of doing social media debates. I think now what I'm going to do is say, you know what? Debating on social media can be a waste of time. Come on my podcast. Let's have a decent discussion. But a while back when I was doing this, someone said that 93% of scientists don't believe in the existence of God. 93% of scientists are atheists, so we should be atheists too. And I've written a whole article on this, and I said, well, that doesn't follow. First, if you look at most statistics, over half of scientists believe in a personal God or some kind of higher power. It's even more so among younger scientists. Now, there are more atheists among scientists, no doubt there, than in the general population. But that's probably because atheists are just more interested in the sciences, that a lot of people who are scientists who happen to be atheists, they were atheists long before they got into their PhD program. So it's just the case that atheists are more likely to become scientists. It's a fallacy, and we're going to talk about fallacies here in a second, to say that just because a lot of atheists are a lot of scientists are atheists, that it follows that science leads people to atheism, or that if you're committed to science, you ought to believe in atheism. So I pointed out to this guy, well, actually, if you look at philosophy, and oh, we were talking about philosophy a bit, and you know, I said, well, this is a philosophical question, the existence of God. It's not a scientific question. It's not something you can discover with a telescope or a microscope. You have to use philosophy and reasoning to see if God exists. And he pointed out, and this is a fair thing to point out, that among philosophers, 73% of philosophers are atheists. But remember the discussion we had about Dr. Peter Adderton last week. So, you know, the New York Times, here is a philosopher at San Diego State University. I think he's a chair of philosophy there. At least he held the chair of a philosophy department. And so this is someone who, in some of his other works, he wrote a dissertation on some kind of obscure Jewish existentialist philosopher, phenomenologist, you know. So someone like Atherton is a smart guy. He writes good stuff on this, you know, kind of more niche areas of philosophy. But then when he starts to write on the existence of God, it is hopelessly bad. Hopelessly bad. So even many philosophers, when they weigh in on the subject, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. And I pointed out to this guy that in the subset of philosophy of religion, so the philosophers who have dedicated themselves to the study of religion and its reasonableness, the majority of them do believe in God. And he just quipped back, well, the majority of people in the Harry Potter fan club think Harry Potter is real. No, they don't. But now you're dismissing these philosophers because they're religious, saying that they're not real philosophers. And I see this all the time. You see people who say, William Lane Craig, for example, they'll say, oh, William, among atheists, some atheists really hate William Lane Craig, who is a philosopher and theologian he's definitely a philosopher, and he's a PhD in theology, who teaches at Biola University. And what they'll say is, the Christian apologist, William Lane Craig. Or I was reading Richard Carrier, who's always good for a chuckle, droning on in a recent blog post, and he referred to Gary Habermas, who's a Christian apologist. He said, the infamous Christian apologist, Gary Habermas. Ooh, infamous. Now you see this term apologist gets thrown out, like, oh, he's an apologist, as if you're some kind of snake oil salesman. Newsflash, Richard. Newsflash to other atheists who are vocal in their atheism, you're an apologist too. An apologist is just someone who defends a position. So they'll rail, you know, so there are atheistic apologists. Richard Carrier is an apologist for mythicism and atheism. Matt Dillahunty is an apologist for atheism. There's nothing bad with being an apologist. It means you defend a particular position. So they'll rail against William Lane Craig and they'll say, oh, he's just a dumb Christian apologist. You know what? I don't agree with Craig on everything. He gets some things wrong, or at least he definitely has some things wrong. He believes in the heresy of monothelitism, the idea that Christ only had one will, you know. But and there's other things where I'm not sure where I stand, but I think I probably end up disagreeing with him, like on the philosophy of time. But I'll say to them, if you think William Lane Craig is a dummy, I want you to sit down and read his 2-volume work on the theories of time. He is a part of the international group of philosophers of time. You know, so I mean, the man knows his stuff. He might be wrong about some things, you know, po buddy's nerfect. But he's no dummy. So they just hand wave that away. And I think that's just funny. Whereas, you know, I would say to him, no, these are real philosophers who are working. So the point of going back to logic here is to point out to him, this guy is running a bunch of fallacies in his reasoning. You know, he's doing one fallacy saying that because scientists are atheists, atheism is true. Nope, that is the bad way of thinking. And dismissing Christian philosophers just because they're Christian. That's a form of ad hominem or poisoning the well fallacy. Now, I can't give a whole podcast on how to be a logical thinker. You could take a whole course on that in college. But I want to give some basic principles and talk about just how logic works. The best way I can summarize logic is this. It's like building a table. You know, when you build a table, you got 4 legs and a tabletop. Now, you know, I'm not talking about like a bar stool, you know, bar table. You got 1 leg. That might be a good metaphor for some arguments. But this is, let's get into what an argument is. All right. An argument is not when you yell and scream at somebody because you're having a bad time with them. That might be some forms of arguments. But even there, in an argument, even in a heated, you know, marital or friend argument, you have an argument with your friend, usually it's because you believe something is true, they don't, you want to convince them of that, and you're having a disagreement about this. If you're fighting about who takes out the trash, which I've just, you know, I bungled today, I forgot to do that, I'm sorry, my dear wife, I will be sure to take that out. So, once again, po buddy's nerfect. You have an argument at home, you have an argument with people, usually there's a truth dispute. Someone is at fault. You ought to own up to this. Why should I own up to this? Well, for reasons 1, 2, and 3. So that's a faint, yelly, mirrored version, shadowy version of a philosophical argument. An argument in philosophy is just this: a series of premises that support the truth of a conclusion. That's just an argument. If X, then Y. Premise A, premise B, and then conclusion C. The classic one, of course, is all men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. That's called a deductive argument. That means the truth of the conclusion follows 100% from the truth of the premises. As long as the premises are true, which are the reasons that support the conclusion, they're true and there's no error in the reasoning. As long as there's no error in the reasoning, then the conclusion follows 100% certainty. Deductive arguments. Inductive arguments. So deductive arguments start from the universal and go to the particular. All men are mortal. The universal. Hey, Socrates is a man. That means Socrates got to be mortal because all men are mortal. Bada bing, bada boom. Inductive arguments start from the particular and go out to the universal. So every swan I've seen is white. Therefore, all swans are white. Well, inductive logic has limits. Sometimes it gets disproven. I've said before, I think last week I said there are black swans in Australia. But we can say, you know, how do we know all men are mortal? Well, every man we've seen has died, so all men are mortal. Of course, we have Jesus and those who are assumed into heaven. That throws this off for many people. But so even there, that's inductive arguments have challenges. So I would argue human beings are mortal because we can philosophically examine the nature of the human body and see that it's prone to corruption and decay. It naturally deteriorates over time. But other inductive arguments are a lot more sound. So you could say, for example, every time we have thrown anytime ice gets above 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 degrees Celsius, it melts. Therefore, ice has a melting point of 0 degrees Celsius, 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Deductive, inductive. Now, there's another kind of argument that comes up where it's an if-then statement, modus ponens or modus tollens. So if I am in San Diego, then I am in California. I'm in San Diego, therefore I am in California. It's a valid argument. Got no problems there. But if you can also do it backwards. If I'm in San Diego, then I'm in California. I'm not in California, so I'm not in San Diego. The first one where you go forward is modus ponens, if then. If A, then B. A, therefore B, modus ponens. Modus tollens is if A, then B, not B, therefore not A. I'm in San Diego, I'm enjoying California, and all tight prices and sunny weather. If I'm not in California, there's no way I'm in San Diego. So those are the structures. You got to know the structure of the argument, so it's like you're building that table, right? An argument is premises or reasons that support a conclusion. So if you just throw a conclusion out there, like, God is just a made-up being. God is just a story people made up. He doesn't exist. Well, that's not an argument. That's an assertion. That's just a magical floating tabletop. Why should I believe your assertion? Why not I believe, well, no, God is real and people recognize that in the stories that they tell. So whenever someone gives me arguments or reasons for why abortion should be illegal or why you should only believe in the Bible alone, and when someone gives you an argument, what you need to find are two things. You've got to find the conclusion, their point, and the reasons to support it. The conclusion you can usually find is when someone uses words like therefore, or that means we should, or it follows that. In logic, or in short form notes, three dots in a triangle, I think that's called a delta, means therefore. I think it's in symbolic logic. And I was more of a classical logic person. Symbolic logic gets so complicated, you can get a foreign language credit at universities if you know enough symbolic logic. But three dots in a triangle is a symbol that means therefore. So when people use those verbal cues, therefore, it follows, so that means, that's their conclusion. Conclusion's only as good as the support it has under it, the legs of the table. Well, why should I believe that? So you could say, okay, why do you believe that's true? How did you come to believe that? Why do you think that is the case, or therefore it is that? What are your reasons to believe that? And then there's two things you can do here. One, you could see if the reasons are false, bam, the argument falls apart. But even if there's no problem with the reasons, the premises, if you've got an error in the argument, if you've got a fallacy in the argument itself, then you're going to have problems down the line. So let's go back to modus ponens and modus tollens, okay? If A, then B. If I'm in San Diego, then I'm in California. If A, then B, not A. If I'm in San Diego, I'm in California, not in California, so I'm not in San Diego. Now, in 1 Corinthians 15, St. Paul actually uses a version of modus tollens in his argument with the Corinthians, because what they're saying is, there is no resurrection of the dead. They're saying, you know, there is no resurrection of the dead. And so what Paul was saying is that if there is no so in Corinth, they denied there'd be a resurrection of the body. You know, they were worried there, you know, you wouldn't get your body after death. They bought into the Greek view, you'd just be a disembodied soul for all eternity. Paul is saying, no, that's not true. And here's my argument. You're saying there's no resurrection of the dead? Well, how about this? If there is no resurrection from the dead, then Christ has not risen from the dead. That's the argument Paul makes in 1 Corinthians 15. He does a if A, then B. He does a modus tollens because he goes backwards. First, he does, if there is no resurrection of the dead, if there is no resurrection of the dead, Christ is not risen from the dead. But then he goes backwards. But Christ has risen from the dead. He negates that false conclusion. Christ has risen from the dead, so there is a resurrection from the dead, Corinthians. You have hope. Christ is the first fruits of the resurrection. He's our hope for resurrected, eternal, glorious life with God. No resurrection from the dead, that means Christ has not raised. If A, then B. Not B. Christ has risen from the dead. Therefore, there is a resurrection from the dead. So this philosophy stuff shows up everywhere, folks. Now, here's two fallacies that are related. Modus ponens, you can either argue forward positive or backwards negative. If A, then B. You can go, if A, then B. A, therefore B. I'm in San Diego, so I'm in California. Or you can go backwards. If A, then B. Not B, therefore not A. Not in California, so I'm not in San Diego. But then the fallacies creep in. If you try to argue any other way, you're going to be wrong. The first one's called affirming the consequent. If it goes like this, if A, then B, B, therefore A. If I am in San Diego, then I am in California. I'm in California, so I must be in San Diego. Well, now what's wrong with that argument? Well, you could be in California without being in San Diego. You could be in L.A., San Francisco, you'd be up visiting the Redwoods. You could go to the Salton Sea. I should do a whole free-for-all Friday on the Salton Sea. There's a terrific story behind our putrefied big salt lake in the middle of Southern California. So that doesn't work. Affirming the consequent, that doesn't work. So you have an error in the reason there. Just because I'm in California doesn't mean I'm in San Diego. So argument doesn't work that way. Now, let me give you a real example of one. If there were no God, people would make up stories about him that contradict each other. And guess what? People do make up stories about God that contradict each other. Therefore, God doesn't exist. That is affirming the consequent. That's if A, there were no God, then B, people would make up stories about him that contradict each other. And hey, people do make up stories about God that contradict each other. Therefore, there is no God. Now, that may be the case that if there were no God, there would be nothing. There would be metaphysical nothing, because nothing could exist at all without God. But the point is, yeah, I could see where you're going with that, but there's other explanations here. It could be the case that people make up stories about God because they have incomplete revelation, or their minds have been darkened by sin, so they don't fully grasp and understand who God is. That's why they have these contradictory opinions and beliefs about God, not because there is no God. Much the same way, if I'm in San Diego, therefore I'm in California, just because I'm in California doesn't mean that I'm in San Diego, folks. Just because there's contradictory stories about God, there are other explanations for that besides the idea that God does not exist. The other way you could do it, if A, then B, that doesn't work, is called denial of the antecedent. If A, then B. A, therefore B. You can do that. Or if A, then B. So that's San Diego. If San Diego, then California. Or you could do not B, not A. A, I'm not in California, so I'm not in San Diego. If I'm in San Diego, then I'm in California. I have not been paid by the tourist board, by the way, to advertise for this great city. I just believe that when you teach philosophy, you should try to use as concrete examples for people to wrap their heads around. And people can wrap their heads around this beautiful city I happen to live in. If I'm in San Diego, then I live in California. I'm not in San Diego, so I'm not in California. See, that's the same thing as affirming the consequent. You could be in another part of the state, even if you're not in San Diego. So denial of the antecedent is the mirror version, it's the reverse flash, bizarro version of the argument, but it's the evil cousin of affirming the consequent. So here's an example of that. If you are an atheist, you'll believe in evolution, but you're not an atheist, so you shouldn't believe in evolution. Well, wait. Yes, if you're an atheist, you'll believe in evolution. Sure, I haven't met an atheist yet who doesn't believe in the theory of evolution. But it doesn't follow that only atheists believe in evolution, just like it doesn't follow that the only people who live in California live in the city of San Diego. Just because I'm not in San Diego doesn't mean I'm not somewhere else in California. Just because I'm not an atheist, it doesn't mean I don't have a belief in the theory of evolution for other reasons. And so you shouldn't, believe in the idea that you have to reject the theory of evolution just because atheists invariably believe in this as part of their belief system. Now, the little caveat there, with denial of the antecedent, there may be cases where the argument is usually invalid, but sometimes you'll get away with the fact that the premise is strong enough, even if you deny the antecedent, the conclusion still ends up being correct. So I think I was trying to think of an example of this before the show, that if I am alive, then I am breathing. I am not alive, therefore I'm not breathing. And I think that's pretty sound there. So some of these fallacies, they're more informal fallacies. So they're not, it's not an error 100% of the time, just an error a lot of the time, something to watch out for. Another thing I have to watch out for, the clock. I don't want to keep you too long today. But you know what? I think next week, if we have shows, pray that we do, we'll do a part two. We'll talk a little bit more about fallacies. I want to help you think a lot better, because when you think better, you're happier. Maybe that'll be my next book, Think Better, Be Happier. Hope you have a happy day. Enjoy the rest of your time here. Thanks again for your support, everyone. And thanks for helping us get past 500 patrons. If you want to help us reach our new goals to facilitate this podcast, check out trendhornpodcast.com. But in any case, guys, I hope you have a blessed day. Take care, everyone.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.